You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Well, I'll be completely honest with you. There was a time, I would say, and this is my adult life. This is not my teenage years. They had not come around during my teenage years in any compelling kind of a way. You had to go to the arcade to play the rudimentary video games in those days. But after I had married, gone to seminary, graduated, and was a young pastor, there were some weeks in the early 90s and thereabouts when I could spend a considerable number of hours, not just one or two hours, in the world of video games. Back when I had more time on my hands and we didn't have the kids, there was more time to do it, and I did. And I dare say that if I had the time and the inclination nowadays, I might spend my time that way. It was a very entertaining way to spend hours in the world of a video game. And many do, not just the young people, but more and more many adults are spending time in that compelling world or worlds. Why have Christians had so little to say about the cultural phenomenon that is video games? Joining us to answer that question and others on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 19th, Kevin Scott. He's associate professor and chair of the Department of Media and Communication at Trinity Western University in British Columbia, Canada, author of the new book of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games. And he's written the cover story for the latest Christian research journal titled Video Games and Christians. Kevin, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Why have Christians who have otherwise had a lot to say about other cultural phenomena like film and media, the internet, you name it, why have they had so little to say about the vast world that many people live in every day of video games?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons historically. I think one of the biggest reasons is that of those media that you just mentioned, video games are one of the newer ones. And I also think that for a long time, probably for the first couple decades of the media, the medium being around, it was a bit of a ghetto culture. I mean, in the sense that it was sort of a subculture that played these games, and it wasn't seen as something for everyone. Whereas the internet, from the beginning, was very quickly, you know, used as something that everyone did. So it's a combination of the newness and the fact that it's a little bit of a subculture for a long time. But I also think that it's a fundamentally different kind of medium than the other ones that we've been used to. When you look at things like film or print or radio, they're media that are very good at adapting things that we are already doing, telling stories and having conversations and things like that. Video games are partly that, but they're also games at base. And while we're sort of familiar with games, we don't often think of them as communication media. And so I think for a long time, the church didn't really notice the fact that there was a lot of expressive capability with video games. And I think we're just starting to catch up with that. And we can hardly avoid it, given how big the industry is now, right? I mean, Grand Theft Auto V, when it came out earlier this fall, was the single biggest piece of entertainment in terms of sales in history by a long shot. So we're starting to realize that, you know what, this is something that a lot of people are paying attention to and a lot of people are using, and so the church is starting to sit up and take notice now.
I remember, I'm going to just kind of speak briefly about my own experience with it, which is very dated. It was a compelling experience, and like I said in the open, I could spend hours, and if my wife didn't come down and tap me on the shoulder and tell me it was time to eat, I might spend more hours living in the world of video games. I remember when the light bulb came on, the very first edition of kind of the first-person shooter Half-Life, and it was a world you could enter and explore, and it was, although you kind of felt like you were on rails sometimes, it was addicting. Should Christians address that nature of it? Whatever the video game may be, even one that isn't violent, as you write in your article, that there is something of the escapist nature to this. Not necessarily bad, but potentially harmful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that people who love games are very sensitive about this because they don't like people constantly slagging what they're really exciting about, you know, criticizing what they're excited about. But there is something to be said for that. There is a real pull to games. There's a difficulty in putting them down. I have the same kind of experience that you described too. Frequently, I'm okay, it's time to go to bed, and then suddenly it's 20 or 30 minutes later, and I'm going, oh, I should have gone to bed 20 or 30 minutes ago. So I think we do have to pay attention to it. I do think sometimes that we blow that addictiveness a little bit out of proportion because we sort of forget with more familiar media that that's also possible. I know for myself, and I've said this in many other contexts, that for me, a really good novel, one that I'm really into, I actually have a harder time putting that down than a video game. And I don't think I'm the only person in that category. So we certainly do have to pay attention to games, and there are warning signs that gamers themselves should be paying attention to and that people around them should be paying attention to. But I also think we need to realize that there are ways to manage that in a healthy way and still enjoy the medium for what it can do.
Now, just describe to someone who, and there are many who have never picked one up, or the extent of their video game experience might be something, you know, one of the web-based games that they play online on Facebook or Angry Birds on their phone or something like that. Describe the gamer's world, if you will. What is open to a person who is really into video games? How would you describe that landscape?
Well, I mean, probably it would have been an easier question to answer, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. The world of the traditional video game made by the big budget companies falls into a number of fairly well-established genres. You have things like sports games, you have action games, you have fighting games, you have role-playing games, you have puzzle games. Each of these genres are quite different from each other, both in terms of how long you play, what you do in the games, the kind of narrative possibilities that are there. There's a tremendous variety, even in traditional video games. But over the last 10 or 15 years, especially as video games have moved into touchscreens on smartphones and everything else, the world out there is incredibly huge and incredibly diverse. It would be kind of like trying to describe film all at once. So, I mean, just, you know, you have games that are very simple, touch-based, reaction-based kind of things that go all the way back to the early days of the arcade. That the Pac-Man-style game where you're just, you know, running around trying to avoid things or eating things or shooting up things, but it's just a quick play. That's still around. That's very popular. Puzzle games like Tetris where you're trying to fit pieces together or, you know, in Angry Birds where you're shooting birds at a structure. That's out there. But there's also these tremendously huge games. Grand Theft Auto V is just one of many that have come out from these major producers that create entire worlds. And I haven't played Grand Theft Auto V myself, but I played games like it. There's one that came out a couple years ago called Skyrim that the world is so big that if you were to just take a character and start running across the world at top speed, it would probably take you something between 45 minutes and an hour just to cross one way across the world. And these worlds are populated with creatures and characters, and there's all kinds of stories and quests for people to do in these games. They're tremendously huge, imaginative worlds that people can really sink themselves into in both a healthy and an unhealthy way.
They've also crossed many of these games that are role-playing games, and because of online gaming, they've been able to kind of become a social medium in and of themselves. Albeit you're not playing as yourself, you can play with any number of people, your friends or even strangers. You can start a story in that world that doesn't exist in the world of your alarm clock going off, you know, at 6:30 in the morning. But it is as real in a social sense for the people who play them as it is sitting down at breakfast with mom and dad or your kids. Talk about that if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is really changing now with the advent of large, massively multiplayer online games, like the famous World of Warcraft and lots of other small ones. But I think for a long time we sort of had the idea that video games were an individual thing that you would do by yourself in your basement and just sit in front of your television and just interact with the computer. But in reality, there are many, many gamers nowadays whose primary purpose for playing games is to play with other people. And it sounds, if you haven't been part of something like this, it often sounds like a very impoverished kind of thing, right? Because you don't see the other person. You maybe see an avatar that represents the other person. You don't necessarily have a full voice chat all the time, and if you do, sometimes it's just not the same as being in the same room as someone. But what a lot of people who don't play these games realize is that when you are in these worlds and doing these really creative, imaginative things together with each other, it can be the basis of some very deep friendships, some very good friendships. I've been in touch with quite a few Christian video game ministries and clubs and groups, and some of them hold Bible studies in imaginary worlds, and some of them are very good friends with people that they've never actually met in real life. And in many cases, it's the games and the game playing that are the basis of those friendships.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to spend some more time talking about Christians and video games on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 19th. Kevin Scutt is our guest. He's associate professor and chair of the Department of Media and Communication at Trinity University, based in British Columbia. He's author of the new book of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games. And he's also written the cover story for the latest Christian research journal, Video Games and Christians. Our call-in number, I invite your questions and your comments, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet @issuesetc. More with Kevin Scutt right after this.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We, the saints at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church, wish all lovers of the unshackled art of music unceasing grace from God our Father and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Since the beginning, the Church has spoken by her sacred hymns. Now is your chance to contribute to the great voice of the Communion of Saints throughout history with the St. Ambrose Hymn Writing Contest. Render your contribution to this great corpus of song. For more information, visit clamavi.com. That's C-L-A-M-A-V-I.com.
Folks, there are 6 weeks left in 2013, and we're $90,000 short of making budget this year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2013. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Christians and video games. Kevin Scott is our guest on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 19th. One of the things that you raised a little bit earlier is I hesitate to call them violence-based games because they really aren't. I mean, the game manufacturers are far more sophisticated than simply to have violence-based games nowadays. But some of them are intensely, sometimes even grotesquely violent, just in the ordinary gameplay. You mentioned Grand Theft Auto 5 is the latest version that is usually kind of poo-pooed by parents as being overly violent for children, and it's just one of many. What are your thoughts on violence in the game world?
Well, I think it's a complicated issue. A lot of people want to have a sort of a simplistic dialogue about it. Either it's right or it's wrong. There's a lot of attempt by people to find proof that, for example, playing violent video games causes people to be more aggressive. There are some psychologists who believe that there is evidence of that. There are other psychologists who argue that there isn't sufficient evidence that that's the case. But even those who do say that there is some evidence have no proof of long-term effects, and they also would not at all make the claim that the effects of playing violent games are more important than a whole host of other social factors in violent crime and things like that. So there's an enormous amount of debate about the science of this. I think the better question for Christians to be asking is the simple morality of playing violent games. And the more I've looked at that issue, the more I find it just a very difficult one. I think that violence is something that should make all Christians feel uncomfortable at best. And I think sometimes in North American culture we are a little bit too quick to be comfortable with violence, either military violence or violence in sports or violence in a whole bunch of other areas of life. And I think that God calls us to be profoundly uncomfortable with violence. The fact is that a lot of video games are drenched in an enjoyment of violence, and that, I think, is a little problematic. At the same time, I think that it's pretty clear that violence is part of our human existence, and that as Christians, we sometimes need to wrestle with that. We need to process that, and I think that stories sometimes that have violence in them is appropriate, and I think that in video games as well, it's also potentially appropriate. But I think a major factor in all of that is how the violence is portrayed. In many cases, in video games, the violence is practically not violence. There's not a lot of gore or bloodshed or a celebration of it. And I don't think that's quite the same thing as a game that has these brutal finishing moves that blood showering all over the place. And so I think we have to be really careful not to lump all video games together. And the other thing to add to that is that there are so many video games out there that have no violence whatsoever in them, or such minimal violence that no one would really object to it in a strong way. And you could really spend the rest of your life just playing games like that. It would be quite possible. The world of video games is just so big right now.
On that issue of violence, how important is it to take into account context? There are games that the premise of the world or the scenario is, say, for instance, war. And in that context, one expects violence, and in a lot of ways, one then approaches the game the same way, say, I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but they approach the game the same way a soldier would, and that is to kind of minimize the violence. They often are not the kind of every man for himself kind of bloodbath that people imagine. They're more sophisticated than that because of the context of the world in which they're set. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, again, that there are games that really celebrate violence, where they put you in a position where really the bulk of the purpose of the game is to blow things up or to chop people up or to shoot them or whatever. But there are other games where narratively they try to make it seem like it's a little bit more, you know, it's just the result of the situation and you have to be there. I think that, you know, I think we still have to be careful with games like that. where we say, oh, well, the context justifies it, because I think that we can easily slip into situations where we too easily justify violent action. I think that that's definitely a danger in a situation like that. But having said that, when playing a game is a remarkably complicated thing. You are often thinking like a character. Sometimes you're thinking like a gamer, trying to control a character. Sometimes you're not even thinking like a gamer at all. Like when I write about video games, so in order to write about them, I have to play the games. And so often I'm sitting there as a scholar, watching the game. I'm doing the game, but there's part of my brain kind of just sort of analyzing it and thinking about it in a totally different way. And while there maybe aren't so many game scholars out there, there's lots of people playing for very different reasons. And so often what seems like violence on the screen is not at all how the player is understanding it. And I think that that's a really complicated thing.
There's one game that I'd like you to explain to me. I understand the premise of it. That's very simple. The appeal is really kind of the mystifying thing to me. Not that I find it objectionable. Minecraft, which is one of these kind of sandbox games, is for those who play it, their second world. It's where a lot of people live for several hours a day, including one of my kids. And you look at the book, and I mean, you look at the game, and it's not graphically sophisticated. It is a very, very simple game, and there's very, very little violence or any even threat of violence. What is the appeal there that says something to you about kind of the essence of online or video gaming?
Minecraft is a remarkable game. I played an early beta of it, and then I was just too busy to get back to it until this fall again, and I picked it up this fall, and it is a remarkable game. It's very impressive. For those who have never played it before, the description of it really doesn't do justice to the game. You play in a blocky world full of, you know, rocks and trees and rivers and stuff, and you get tools, pickaxes, shovels, and stuff like that, and you dig up raw materials, you mine them, and then you craft them and combine them into other objects. And it, like I said, that sounds remarkably dull, but the appeal of the game is really Lego. If you've ever played Lego, and you like Lego, you will like Minecraft, because it's the same kind of world where you can pick up blocks and components and put them together and do all kinds of fantastic things with them. So the game actually doesn't have like a regular win condition like a lot of games do. There's never a point where you're done the game. So people make their own goals. So I've seen worlds where some of the most fantastic worlds, they have entire servers of people working on the same world. For example, there's a sort of a life-sized replica of ancient Rome that people have built. You know, fictional worlds have been recreated in Minecraft. Other people will build silly sculptures, or they'll create role-playing games within Minecraft. Apparently, there's a group of people that have used the logic of the game to create a working computer within Minecraft, which tells you something about the flexibility of the game. So it's an anything machine, in a sense. It allows you to play. And it's a game like that really unlocks much of the potential of video games. It's not so much my cup of tea, but for a lot of players, it's like painting on a canvas or creating a sculpture. You're working with blocks, and you're playing around with them and doing interesting and creative things with them. It's a remarkable game for spurring creativity.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds here, Christians might have the knee-jerk reaction of saying, well, the gaming world is all fantasy, it's addictive, it can be very violent, Christians have sought to avoid it. What would be your 30-second response to that?
God made us to enjoy his creation. God made us creative for a reason, and that can't be our entire life. But C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and many other important Christian thinkers have agreed that God made us to imagine more than what we experience in everyday life. And video games are, when they are at their best, they are one possible avenue for us to really really exercise that God-given desire to play and to create and to enjoy fantasy.
Folks, you'll find a link to the book of God and Games under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Kevin Scudd is associate professor and chair of the Department of Media and Communication at Trinity Western University in British Columbia. He's author of the book of God and Games, A Christian Exploration of Video Games, and he's written the cover story for the latest Christian Research Journal titled Video Games and Christians. Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time in hour two of Issues, Etc. First, we're going to be talking with Pastor Heath Curtis, part three of our series with him, on the Christ-centered life. We'll talk about prayer. And then, what preaching is and isn't, and where Christ is in preaching. We'll talk about Spirit-filled preaching with Pastor David Peterson in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. Coming up on this Friday, November the 22nd, we're going to kick off our latest Issues, Etc. 24. That's live, 24 hours of Issues, Etc. It is exactly what it sounds like. We'll be talking about the Psalms and the major themes in the Psalms with Pastor Will Wheaton, Bill Swirla, Jonathan Fisk, John Kleinig, Brian Wolfmiller, and others, and we'll cover all the genre of the Psalms in 24 live hours of Issues, Etc. It begins 11 a.m. Central at issuesetc.org on Friday, November the 22nd, and it'll run through 11 a.m. Central on Saturday, November the 23rd. You can listen live to Issues, Etc. 24 coming up at 11 a.m. this Friday at issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking with Pastor Heath Curtis about prayer. How does prayer fit into the Jesus-centered life? We'll answer that question right after this. Hour two of Issues, Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Coming Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 11 in the morning Central Time on November the 22nd through 11 in the morning Central on November 23rd. Issues, Etc. 24, Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd. Listen live at issuesetc.org.